Welcome to episode 204 of Telepractice Today with Kim Dutro Allen and Dr. Todd Houston.
Hey, welcome back to another episode. My tip for this week is for being successful in the schools, you really got to make a connection with the person who actually runs the school. And it's not the principal and it's not the special education director or the special ed teacher. It is the school secretary. Mm-hmm. 100% it's the school secretary. And I feel like they even set the tone for the whole school as well. Yeah. But if you are, especially if you're doing case management kinds of things, you need to get to know the school secretary so she can tell you when things are happening, when the principal's available, when they're not available. With the high school that I work at, me and the school secretary text all the time because she is the person who's in charge of going and finding my kids or calling them down to the office. And she knows who's there and who's absent. And I've even had sometimes where the IEP meeting starts and everyone forgot that there's supposed to be someone on the computer who's also there. Yep. So being able to send, you know, a quick call or a quick text to that school secretary to say, hey, they forgot me in the meeting. Make sure you know who they are. They know your name. You know their name. It's going to make your school partnership a lot better.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. So it's always been the school secretary, the administrative assistant, right, that who's going to really have her or his, I don't want to stereotype, finger on the pulse of what mm-hmm. is going on. So not only do they know what's going on and have all the good gossip, they also know how to maneuver and, you know, around all the schedules and all that. So yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah, they it's even know like person. Yeah, they know the parents who are going to be hard to get a hold of and easy to get a hold of, all of those
things.
That's
right. They're experiencing all that every day.
Yep.
And so, yeah, they're the ones really in control most of the time. Yeah, it's always been my experience for sure.
Yep.
And even in university settings, it's the staff, you know, versus the faculty. And it's the staff who've usually been there longer and know right. the university and all that stuff. And they can
seen
help
lots of other people come and go and they exactly. stay there steady.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. They kind of seen it all. Well, on today's show, we have Tara Rail joining us on this episode. As many people may realize is that Tara is an expert on all things technology. So I am excited to have her on the podcast this week to share some of her insights that she's gathered about sort of what's coming, some of the new disruptive technologies that might be shaping telepractice in the short term and maybe even in the medium term, definitely in the long term. So let's listen to Tara.
Hi, are you creative? Do you want to give a webinar or teach a course? Maybe you're a writer. Do you want to create a blog? Maybe you have an idea for a podcast. Whatever your passion is, we at 3C Digital Media Network want you to be a content creator so we can bring your ideas to life. So, to get started, visit our website at 3cdigitalmedianetwork.com. and sign up to be a content creator. We look forward to seeing your passions come to life on our platform.
Hey, we want to welcome Tara to the podcast. Tara, give us just a little bit of your background for people that have not heard your previous episode.
Yeah, I'm Tara Rail. I'm based out of Colorado, just north of Denver. I have been a school SLP, then a private clinic SLP, and now for over a decade have run my own private practice that is 100% telepractice, with the majority of my caseload being international at this point.
Just seriously, how is the international work going?
It's complicated, which is good because it means a lot more countries are getting SLP licenses, which is needed. Right. It's absolutely needed. But it means they don't really know what to do with people like me. So like right now I am going on since I think July of last year, still trying to get my Philippines license. I still don't have it
now
because they just can't figure out their own rules around somebody being out of country. You know, then you run into the situation in China where I can't even pass the test there for the license because I don't speak, read, or write Mandarin. Whereas Hong Kong, that was the fastest license. That was less than 48 hours. I had my license in my inbox from sending in all my application paperwork. So it really, it's super, super country specific. I was working on Singapore recently, but they require a ton of paperwork from the family hiring me, and they really don't know what to do with a family's private SLP. So again, it's complicated, but it's good because it means we're getting more licenses out there and it's being a more recognized profession worldwide.
Right. And just one country at a time, almost.
But yes, yeah. slow and steady.
Slow and steady wins the race, right? Yeah. Awesome. Well, Tara, you know, everyone who knows you knows that you're so interested in technology. And you seem to have your finger on the pulse of what's coming. What's the next big thing? And for those who are at this past ASHA, you were able to talk about that as well at ASHA. And so we thought we'd have you back on and maybe let's talk technology and see what's going to be affecting SLPs and others who are doing telepractice.
I think the big thing is I think a mistake that's made often, and not just in our profession, in a lot of professions, is we go out looking for technology specific to our profession. Mm-hmm. And honestly, telepractice, one, is pretty SLP specific term. You know, the psychologists use a different term, you know, different people use different terms there, and even doctors. And we're still just not a big enough player in the game for there to be technology made for us. So the biggest thing I'm always trying to explain to people, especially when I go to these major tech conferences, I'm not looking for technology made for therapy. It's out there, but it's a very, very small amount. It's a very, very limited section. I'm there kind of taking a big step back and going, okay, how could we use this in therapy? How could this change how we do therapy? How could this change things for on the client end as well as the therapist end? But also just keeping an ear out as to the issues people are running into in our field and figuring out what people in other fields, how they're combating that. Sure. So, you know, a big one a lot of people have talked about that became bigger and I think a little more well-known, but I still don't think it's totally well-known, is noise-canceling headphones are causing a ton of balance issues for people. People who are wearing them all day long doing telepractice, not giving themselves a break with the noise-canceling on, so they're getting that pressure piece where they're starting to see more and more instances of vertigo for people. So there's this big complication of, okay, but how do I get the sound I need? You know, how do I get rid of like the background sound, but how do I also protect my hearing? And just in general, there's not a ton of limits on how loud we can make our computers and how loud we can make our headphones. So again, looking at it from a whole person, whole therapist perspective, what's happening out there for people who are in sound-based fields?
Right.
You know, disc jockeys, sound engineers, those kinds of pieces to protect their hearing. Right. And how can we adapt that to make sure that we're protecting not only the SLPs, but our clients as well on the other end who might have headphones on during their sessions and just hearing health in general. And so I go to these sessions and I go a lot to the sound engineers. I mean, these are some of these conferences. We've got like world famous DJs in these booths explaining what they've used. And, you know, we've got some of the big players in the field there showing off their latest technology there. And a lot of it is, how do we get that quality sound, remove that background noise, but protect the hearing and the health overall of the sound engineers and the disc jockeys and things like that. And so I'm going there going, okay, but how could SLPs access this and use this as well within their practice? And similarly across the board, looking at video, audio, monitors, what are we doing in medical? What are we doing in robotics? You know, those kinds of pieces, and seeing how can we adapt those, or how are they coming our way? This is what's coming out right now. Down the road, probably not this year, but maybe in the next couple of years, how could this be really positive or something negative that, oh, we're going to have to figure out a workaround for this because this is going to be an issue if our clients have this technology, but we're trying to do teletherapy.
Right. So beyond those kinds of things, and not technology is not specifically made for us, what do you think will be some of the big technologies coming? Because people throw out, you know, like virtual reality and augmented reality, and of course AI, and how that's going to be integrated more and more. So just what do you think about some of those? Are they all viable or not?
Yes, I think they all are. And I think the thing that we as SLPs have to kind of get ahead of is, I found, at least across my time in this profession, is that we're always a couple steps behind the technology. And very often our clients are ahead of us. I think we saw that a lot in 2020 when a lot of people were suddenly thrust into telepractice and didn't understand the technology, didn't know how to do it. So I'm a big proponent of like getting ahead of it and figuring out what that's going to look like, and at least trying to be on par with my clients who are absolutely using ChatGPT and absolutely, you know, using a bunch of the other technology there. So I think they are viable, and I think they have potential if, one, we can look at it creatively, and secondly, we can also look at it ethically. And those two things are hard to hold in the same hand into the same basket at the same time a lot. But, you know, like one of the things I talk about is robotics has continued to be a big thing, like actual robots. But, you know, but one of the big robots at CES this year was a very advanced robot that you could control remotely to move around your house to check on your pet. You know, and the whole focus was that when you're working out of the house, you can interact with your pet, you can talk to your pet, you can give them directions, you can all these pieces. It was part of that, you know, autonomous houses and, you know, smart houses, things like that. But I'm staying there and my husband's like, we don't even have a pet right now. And I'm like, no, EI. Like if the therapist could move to follow the kid and the parent's not trying to run around with the laptop or the iPad or the phone and try and keep the kid in view, that therapist has control of the camera to be child-led, to follow their interest, to interact with them wherever they are in the house, that changes the game for EI, which right now there's a lot of interactive EI, but there's a lot of parent coaching in EI simply because we've got so many of these limits with the screen and the camera being very, very stationary in a lot of ways. So
I think even doing classroom observations, that's really hard to do and find a good way to do it being a online school-based SLP. So that'd be a great, you know, everyone would be in. I don't know if they'd interact the way that they were supposed to in the classroom if there's a robot sitting there, but
research shows they will after they get used to it. And surprisingly enough, if you don't dress up the robot. So they've actually done research to see if they like put clothes on the robots and hats on the robot and try and make it a little more human. It actually weirds people out more than if you just make it like robot-esque and people just, it's like, you're not fooling anybody. Everybody knows it's a robot kind of thing. There's actually research that shows it's better just to leave it full robot looking and it weirds out people less. But yeah, before COVID, we had, TinyEye was one of them, and a couple of the different companies had the robots that so the SLP could go pick up their own student, walk in the halls, go do observations, those pieces.
Yeah.
They hold a lot of potential and they're growing quickly. I mean, one of the technologies I saw, there's, I could literally stand in front of a camera and simultaneously a complete 3D rendition of me could be cast across the floor at the convention center live as I'm moving. It's moving. It looks just like me. It even had filters so they could make me look much younger and much older with the different filters, those pieces, kind of just demonstrating the technology. But I was sitting here talking to the creators going, one, conferences. How often would conferences love speakers who just can't make it? Like, you know, I'm in Australia. This conference is in Chicago. That's just not going to happen right now. How much better is that than just, you know, the talking box, the video of actually a 3D rendition of this person giving their presentation, being able to come up and live chat with them live, and both of you are getting the exact same feed. It creates a much more connected world in that way. Similar with therapy, the student walks into the room and I've got much more of a 3D therapist rather than a 2D therapist. Mm-hmm. How does that change our interaction as well? The research shows that presence is so important. I mean, research going back to the 1980s as to how they were trying to get it so people would believe what they were seeing on TV and like forget the screen was there. You know, similar to now. I mean, how do we get our kids so sucked into the session that they forget they're sitting in front of a computer and they're really engaged with the therapist, really engaged in the session, and we're getting really great trials, really great practice, really great interactions and connection with those clients.
So this is what you're describing is more of a, like a hologram or holographic 3D image.
And we're getting them in a couple different ways. A lot of the people are doing them with lights, which has issues. One, because of the lights and the refresh rate with cameras. Like, it's impossible to even get, like, a good video. The amount of people lined up trying to get good video for, like, their social media and stuff at the conference was hilarious, because you're sitting there watching going, your refresh rate is matching the lights. That's why it's not
working. It's not going to work.
You know, but then other ones where it was completely amazingly, like, it's you're limited to pretty much a giant, almost think like a giant Barbie box is what you're showing up in. But you're showing up in as 3D using the new transparent monitors that have come out this year and aspects like that to give this 3D rendition that people can come up and chat with. And there's not a delay. There's not a lag there. And it can give. And so where are we going with this? How are we going to be able to change not only how teletherapy looks, but how many more people we can interact with who maybe might not be able to interact this way, but we can give more of a presence piece with being there in person in a way.
But it kind of reminds me too, like, you know, I hate to use this as an example, but, you know, watching the Marvel movies and, you know, Iron Man, you know, and Robert Downey Jr. is, you know, in his lab, and he has the 3D rendering right in front of him, and he's moving things around with his finger, and he's, oh, I can do it this, and he's changing things. And it's, you know, it's kind of something similar, I'm thinking too, not only the image of the person being there, but you could actually have a game or some other, you know, stimulus you're going to use to interact with the child or the adult.
Even absolutely.
Practice feeding with an adult, maybe, or something along those lines.
Absolutely. See, Todd, I thought you were going to go further back. I thought you were going Star Trek with me, and I was like tracking right there with you. Holograms, well, holodeck here.
The reason I didn't go holodeck is that I've used that term with my graduate students, and I even asked them the other day, how many of you are Star Trek fans? And they're like, my dad is.
No, we're dating ourselves here.
Star Trek. Is that like Star Wars? There was one. There was a couple of students had never seen Star Wars before.
None of the movies. Hurts my heart.
No.
And I was like, you people need to get out more often. I mean, give me a break. But yeah, they had no idea what a holograph or holodeck was from Star Trek. No idea.
And I think that's the difference, though, is what I like differently from the Marvel to the holodeck piece is the actual tactile feedback. Piece too is, you know, a lot of our research, and we see this so often, you know, that pendulum swings so drastically either direction, right? Where we go, everyone, like, let's get rid of the books in the libraries, let's get rid of the toys, we're going to go all virtual at the iPads. Whoops, that didn't work, you know, and we're not finding that great balance, you know, and I'm finding that a lot of they're following the research really closely at these conferences that I'm going to, because these are all the cutting edge things. And what is research showing? What do people want? You know, and so, like, some of my favorite things is this chessboard, which is actual physical chessboard the kid can have, but then you can virtually move your piece from your cell phone on their chessboard. And so they're seeing the piece move, they're picking up pieces, they're moving them, they're hoping to expand it to more games, not only just for teletherapy, but for grandparents to play with grandkids or traveling parents or friends who live, you know, apart from each other. But we're seeing that balance of, like, how do we balance, yes, virtual and all the potential we have with virtual, along with realizing that we need that tactic feedback. We're seeing that with AI. I am typically not one. So I'm in a tough spot. I am the queen of motion sick, like the queen of getting motion sick. But I'm also a person who says you better not talk about tech unless you've actually tested it out. Like, it's a bunch of things, see a bunch of stuff on YouTube, but have you actually, like, climbed in the suit? So I wait till the last day of the convention, and then I get into all, like, the virtual reality suits, because then it's okay if I just hose myself for the rest of the day. But a big thing at the conference this year was the improvements in haptic feedback in hands for VR. So again, they're still bulky. They're still huge. Like, I can't see any of my, like, middle school kids wearing these, but it was a situation where you could reach out and grab something and it would give you pushback on it. So it actually felt like you're holding a cup or that you're actually grabbing the doorknob or pieces like that. And again, thinking, go, let's swing the other direction. Let's think about the people who have had a stroke or who have the Parkinson's, who are trying to get back home and stuff, you know, and how many of these rehab facilities, how many of these centers don't have a kitchen they can go test their kitchen safety out in and their ability, and how heavy a hand can they pick up, you know, and can they open their closet and pull out their clothes and all those pieces? Like, there's limited of what we can do based on what the rehab facility has. This can offer a whole nother potential of, well, can they, do it. This is a great way that we can test to see like what is the ability for them, how much independent living can we get back to them in this way by practicing these things in environments that we might not have readily available, but that we could simulate for them in those situations.
And potentially making it safer too to practice those things without them having to do it with the real thing and maybe falling and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so it's, again, so much potential there, especially as we see things getting smaller, seeing things changing, you know. But my husband and I's joke for the whole conference, because we typically attend it together, is, you know, they threw AI into everything. It's like, check out our pen. It's got AI in it. Check out our sunglasses. They've got AI in it, you know. Check out, you know, and you're like, how does that need AI? I don't understand. But, you know, so much, you know, we, you know, gloves that don't require any movement to make complete selections on a whole computer screen that are reading the waves. Hand doesn't have to move, just the intention to move the hand can make the selections on the computer. Pieces like this that give just so much possibility to give back, so much independent living, so much autonomy to so many of our clients.
Yeah, and that's not what someone first thought of when they developed it. And then we go and we steal it.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, that was really just like this cool feature. Like, everyone's just talking about, like, what a cool feature this is. How fun that it's. Like, I don't even have to move my hand, and I can make sections. Honestly, it's like, I'm standing around, because I listen to a lot of conversation around me, because these people are from the tech industry, you know, they're influencers, there's things like this. So I'm sitting here listening to these conversations around me, and, like, it was interesting how many conversations were like, wow, I can increase my laziness with this technology. And I'm sitting here going, oh, my gosh, I can give my clients so much more freedom.
Right.
With this option, you know, just all the different perspectives as to the creation of so much of this tech. I mean, everything from robots who make you boba and make you very fancy cotton candies to, you know, everything else. Wow. But what are these options that can be for our clients, especially even looking at so many of my clients who, you know, I start them when they're young. As I say all the time, I don't understand. They keep growing into adulthood. I'm clearly not getting any older, so I don't know how they're growing up so rapidly on me. But as they're getting into adulthood, not only being able to practice so many of these life skills, but finding ways, like us as the specialists, us as the SLPs, being able to know what technology is available out there that they can explore for that independent living, for that more independence. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have, who else are they going to see if there's a technology that can make it so they can cook on their own, or, you know, so that they can navigate the streets on their own, to walk to their first job, things like that. But if we know what technology is coming, what technology is out there, we can, you know, be sure to connect people to it of, you know, oh, you've got a Parkinson's diagnosis, you're afraid of losing your voice. Check out this great company. They're doing some fantastic things pairing AI with voice banking to be able to give you the ability to say, I love you to your loved one in your own voice, rather than what we're used, you know, years and years and years ago, what we were looking at the speech generating devices versus what we can do now, pairing that AI with more of the advanced technology and all the video and audio we now have, thanks to smartphones.
Right. I was curious, and I know with VR, you're wearing things, but, and gloves and all that, are talking more about specific wearables and maybe apps. Did you have any that stood out or that you saw?
You know, I think there's a lot of move by multiple companies for the glasses, which I think we've seen a big, you know, resurgence for the Apple one. But there are a lot of companies who are doing a lot of different things with the glasses, and they offer a lot of potential there for overlaying maps when you're walking, for giving those cues. You know, I remember when we had the Google Glass, 10 years ago or whatever, which was really a fantastic technology. It was just ahead of its time. People weren't ready to put technology on their face all the time, whereas nowadays people are like, hand it over. That sounds amazing, you know? But where I'm seeing it is, so there's kind of two, the conferences I go to, there's two kind of parties there. There's the Apple, the Google, you know, Logitech, the big name companies and what they've done and how they've taken technology into like their proprietary. But the interesting thing about the conferences I go to is there's also the people who are creating the technology that you can then put into anything you're creating. And that's where I was seeing a lot of that potential and that hope kind of for the therapy field. Because what we've seen, even if you look at like the Fitbits and things like that, like there's limited as to what they can do. But a lot, especially in, so the main conference I go to has like complexes. So you can go to the gaming complex and the medical complex and the automotive complex and et cetera, et cetera, food complex, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And what I was seeing a lot of was a lot of potential for the devices that can be used to create more devices. Like, they're holding the technology, but they're giving, they'll sell you rights and licenses to use that technology in your watch or in your glasses or those pieces. And that's got a lot more potential, I think, for us. Like, I think we can absolutely maneuver some of the wearables. I'm a big one on vitals and biometrics, like as SLPs. Mm-hmm. That gives us so much information as to the anxiety our clients might be feeling, the stress they might be having, the anxiety they're having in school. If we can actually see what their watch said, if they can show us like what it looked like in the hours of school versus outside of school, you know, how is, you know, how are they feeling, our kid with fluency issues during the school day when they have to speak in class? Can we see those spikes? And are we using our exercises? Did it work? Did it not work? Like, we can get real data. And I think as SLPs, it can be, especially telepractice SLPs, it can be hard to get that data. So I think wearables have huge potential for there. And I think we've got a lot of potential moving forward in getting more of that biometric information, being able to give us a lot more of that just haptic feedback, you know, in devices to students, of reminding them and being able to like have a say, hopefully in the future, of that programming. You know, even looking at, you know, heaven forbid another situation like 2020 were to happen again, you know, the amount of remote biometric readings we can take, even for those who worked in nursing homes, and those pieces, you know, where maybe somebody's in quarantine, they can't necessarily go in and work with a client. Can we still get those vitals that we need, do those checkups on them, be more involved, give that feedback? And the one thing I really like about the haptic feedback is it almost gives a way for that physical touch without that physical touch. And as virtual therapists, I mean, when you, if you've been an in-person therapist, you've seen the benefit, like a touch on the hand can give to a student, you know, or a guiding hand on the shoulder, which we're limited in. We can't necessarily do that. You know, I joke with all my kids, you know, the old V8 commercial, you know, I'll reach forward and bop the camera of like, hey, dude, I heard that. That's kinds of pieces. But, you know, we lose that piece. Haptic feedback has a potential to give us back a way to even be more connected with our clients in that way of being able to actually like us be able to decide when it kind of gives that little buzz or that little tap kind of thing to be like, hey, reminder, and hey, this is, you know, Miss Tara, those pieces. So it wasn't necessarily a specific device that I was like, ooh, you've got potential, but it was really that underlying technology that people are going to be able to license and put in to these devices that I think has a lot of potential. You know, I'm seeing a lot of apps that they're creating that can just use AI to read faces, to be able to talk about, to measure mental health, to measure stress, et cetera, in like 10 seconds or less. Like, how much information is that for us when often our students are seeing us way more often than they're seeing their psychiatrist, their psychologist, maybe the family doctor? We're that front line of defense usually, whether we're seeing them once or twice a week, 30 minutes to an hour each time. We're that first line of defense to be like, ooh, I don't like this trend. Like, we need to get more of the team involved, et cetera. Well, how much even better when part of your checkup is don't forget to check in on the app and send me a screenshot of your results. And, oh, I can see that this trend is not go, you know, I know we had a medication change 3 weeks ago and this trend is not a solid trend. Then we can get that intervention in even quicker. Again, things that are a little limited by the screen, you know, there's only so much body language you can see. There's only, I mean, I don't know about you, but my kids love the video filters, especially when their anxiety gets high. So it's not uncommon for me to be doing therapy with like a raccoon or a fox when my students' anxiety gets high. And so they flip on the AI virtual filter, you know, because they're much more willing to talk to me as a fox or a raccoon versus, you know, a 10-year-old boy. You know, but when I can have that information to be like, ooh, okay, you know, it's time to get more of the team involved. It's time, you know, to have the parents reach out and let's double check this because this isn't where it's going. And I think that's a really that's a gift that we get to have, seeing our clients as regularly and as frequently as we do, no matter their age, no matter their diagnosis. Like, we're very often the front lines there, being able to be getting more of this data and information to help safeguard themselves, especially for those who have the communication difficulties. That doesn't impact a lot of this. This doesn't impact the stress readings on the wearables. That doesn't impact, you know, the AI facial recognition for depression and anxiety and stressors and things like that. So we can get that unbiased data to, you know, and be the advocate for our clients who might not be able to advocate for themselves for whatever reason.
Good points. And I think it just makes me just really, really excited about what's going to be here. And it's, excuse me, it's sort of like the all these things that are happening that you're reporting on and are so innovative and really cool, but there's also in, you know, the unknown unknowns. So there's probably technology out there that we just don't know about yet. That's going to probably, you know, in a year or 2 years, it's going to be like, wow, look at that. You know, where did that come from? I mean, even people talked about AI for a while, but we really didn't have a good handle on exactly what it could do. And then, of course, past year, it's just been everywhere. You know, everyone's talking about it and how and using it. A lot of people are using it. So it's amazing. So it's so it's really interesting.
Yeah. I wonder if we looked at the program from Asha in 2022 versus 2023, how many people were talking about AI
in 22.
Yes. Yes. And yours accepted, and I did not make it to every AI session that there was, but a lot of them, I would go there and then it would be like very like theoretical, very like research based, very like not how I could go and use AI with my students that day, which I think a lot of SLPs were looking for. So what are you using AI for? What are you worried about with AI, and where do you think it's going?
Fingers crossed. I've put in a more advanced level talk in Call for Papers for Asha on that topic specifically, specifically more in the business and private practice section. So fingers crossed, we won't know till July there. But yeah, I think a lot of, I agree. I went to quite a few AI talks and I mean, I don't consider myself an idiot, but some of that theoretical talk was, I was like, I don't program computers. I use them. Like, I don't know.
Right.
So definitely the bias here is having a father, a brother, and a husband who are all highly involved in the tech industry. So it's a conversation that happens regularly around the table and by text message. You know, looking at the adoption of how long it took us to reach 1 million users, you know, for TikTok, for Instagram, for Spotify, et cetera, ChatGPT blew it out of the water there. We are not the only ones who are behind the ball on this. So SLPs are behind the ball on ethics when it comes to AI. Everyone is behind the ball. Business is panicking, et cetera. But the overall research consensus is that it's too late. Like, there will never be agreed upon ethical standard for how to use AI. Just society.
Because it happened too fast.
It happened too fast. People didn't expect that advancement so quickly. And it's out the gate. Like, we're just chasing a racehorse down right now and we don't have a chance. You know, and so now it's much more like within the professions, et cetera, to kind of make those decisions to what's ethical and what's not. You know, I have found, I have heard and seen a lot of what I would consider unethical use, but I've seen a lot of really ingenious ethical uses for it as well. You know, my kind of my standard always is one, of course, the code of ethics, but also AI shouldn't be replacing you as the SLP. Right. It should be assisting you as the SLP. And that's the big, like, do you have the knowledge and are you using your professional expertise to see that and be like, huh, I ask for a bunch of, you know, initial P words in this list and the word phone is in the list, you know, because AI doesn't realize that that's not an initial P word. Situations like that, you know, where I see them like putting all the data in from an assessment and then asking it to write a full report. Again, I'm like, okay, first of all, we know FERPA and HIPAA, you know, we have concerns. Right. There. Also, there's a level of analytics that the AI doesn't have that SLPs do have. Do I think it'll get there? Probably. Yeah. Because it's moving very quickly and it's learning very quickly. I love AI for the ability it has to imitate situations. So you can ask AI to, hey, I need to practice ordering food. You know, so can you act as if I'm ordering food from you from a pizza establishment, which is great for my clients because there's a lot less anxiety in chatting with AI than there is actually calling pizza places like I used to make them do or actually order a pizza. There's a lot of great way for my clients to check themselves. So remembering that my clients are all executive functioning and social cognition, but it's a great way for them to check, hey, I am a 15-year-old boy and I am texting one of my guy friends trying to, you know, set up a day that we can meet up to play video games, you know, and sitting a text in, like, does this sound like a 15-year-old boy, or can you edit this to sound like a 15-year-old boy, you know?
Yeah. Giving me ability that with my students too. Out.
Yeah, and it's huge. I love the image and the video rendering pages, you know? It's great for getting a lot more descriptors, but it's also great for encouraging language and speech, but encouraging creativity and descriptive words and being more specific. It's a great way for me for visually to show my clients when they're not giving enough detail, which is a big struggle for my kids who have social cognition, executive functioning. Like they'll describe something and I'll put it in exactly. And they'll be like, well, that's not right. And I'm like, it looks right based on what I heard. So it's a great perspective taking lesson for them of like, ooh, I didn't give enough. I just assumed they understood as much as I did kind of situation, you know? And so I love using it for that. As a business owner, it's fantastic. You know, it's fantastic for helping me, you know, especially ChatGPT, but quite of the other ones, you can actually make an avatar of yourself. You can put in a ton of your social media posts, a ton of your emails, a ton of your blog posts. So it gets your tone, it gets your style of writing, and then it can sound more like you, and then it can edit stuff for you. I don't think you should be like, hey, I need to write an article for Todd on technology. So here's my 6 data points. Can you write me an article? Not an ethical use in my consideration, but I'm totally fine saying, hey, I read this article. Here's, you know, a couple paragraphs out of some other articles in the same magazine. Like, can you make sure this matches tone or suggest some edits for me, pieces like that? So I think, again, is it a tool or are you using it to replace you in your brain? Because the biggest thing is any of us who've worked with clients, we know that we can look at that Goldman Fristo. We can look at that self. We can look at that castle result. And it may say A, but we're looking at the kid and we're going, that isn't an accurate measure at all. Like you're saying with the normal limits, and I'm seeing a kid who is absolutely struggling, who is absolutely failing the classes, who absolutely, so why didn't this measure what I'm seeing? How do I get it? And that's where we come in as the speech language pathologists. And we have to be very careful not to like outsource our brains to another system because we're losing that human aspect to it. So no matter what we put into ChatGPT, no matter how we use it, making sure that we're continuing to bring in the human aspect of it, both us as SLPs as humans, but also our clients as humans as well. And how are we maintaining that autonomy and maintaining that knowledge and expertise? I mean, ChatGPT can tell me that this kid needs to work on their initial P's. And I can be like, this kid can't formulate a sentence. Initial P's don't matter right now. Them actually being able to get their wants and needs met is what matters right now. Right. But I know that as a human working with humans.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, I think universities should be working on AI. Absolutely. Yeah. We need to be teaching ethical AI use to our SLP undergrads and our grad students. You know, I heard of a fantastic professor friend of mine. I was telling her the other night, I was like, oh, I love you. You're such a genius. You know, she's like, we're absolutely letting, like, the assignment is, you know, put in your goals, have ChatGPT write a therapeutic plan for you. Then you have to find one thing that won't work and find research to defend why that wouldn't work as a therapeutic.
That's a good
and that therapeutic basis for some of the other suggestions and why you would go along with those. So absolutely using it as a tool, but not losing your knowledge and expertise and ethics as a professional too.
Yeah. I did have, you were talking about having it check the tone of a student, and I had a student use it to see how the student would advocate for themselves in the classroom, and that sometimes it goes into that I'm whining and complaining, and how we switch it from that to sounding more professional. But the student was like, well, it doesn't sound like me. And I think that's exactly what it is, still having that autonomy and, okay, I can take these ideas and then I can change it so it still is me in there. And yeah, that's where there's the part that we have to be careful of. The other thing is, I feel like once you start using it, it's hard to stop.
It is. It has an addictive quality to it, for sure.
Yep. And it's like, well, why would I sit here and try and think about that when I can just have GPT come up with a list for me?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and I think there's a constantly this balance. I think absolutely. Right. If you hear one of the top reasons after pay for people leaving this profession is being overloaded with paperwork. If you go back and read the research, I mean, there's a fantastic article in 2002, which made me laugh. My husband's like, that was kind of outdated. And I was like, actually, it was a problem in 2002 and it's still a problem in 2024. It just says one thing really clearly. We haven't fixed it yet. But, you know, paperwork and stuff is overloaded. So yeah, absolutely. How can we use it to, you know, make ethically, we know we need to take out identifying information for our students. Great. Well, if I can make just a list over here in my Excel file that says that so-and-so, Johnny is student one and Sarah is student two and Ben is student three, and then I can put all their availability in, and you're going to make me an entire graph with when everybody would be best matched up based on goals and based on time availability, make a schedule. Why wouldn't I do that? And instead of having to skip that entire first week of work in the schools, just trying to track down and fight to get a schedule that everybody approves of and that is actually works for everybody. And I didn't math wrong because I'm an SLP and I don't math very much, you know, and if that can figure that out for me and I can jump right into therapy, absolutely. You know, versus like, let's not throw it in, you know, now AI is running my therapy session for me. Hurrah. Well, I sit here and act as if it's an SLPA and I'm an SLP, you know, like where is human connection needed versus where is human connection not needed? It's not needed in planning that schedule. But guess what? It is still needed in that report. Like when we just let AI spit out that entire report, we again lose the human aspect of it. And how's a parent feeling reading a report that one doesn't sound like it came from a human? Just like when we can look at images on social media and be like, you're AI because it's got that lean to it. You know, these reports come in and not only does it not sound like a human wrote it, it doesn't sound like we're talking about their child, their grandfather, their husband as a human being either. So again, making sure that we're continuing to make sure that we're holding on to that human factor in how we use it. And it being a tool, absolutely fantastic tool. If it can cut down my work time, I don't need to sit, like you said, Kim, I don't need to spend 30 minutes writing out an entire list of words sitting there going, fat, fam, family, like trying to remember all my FAs out. Like, I don't need to do that. I can get a list, but then again, go through the list to make sure it doesn't throw some random weird word where the F is silent in there. You know, but absolutely, let's cut down on the time of the stuff that doesn't need us as a human so that we, in a way, self-care, so that we have more energy, we have time to be a human and connect with our coworkers and our clients and the people who need us as our human self.
I think that is extremely great advice. So,
a little passionate about the AI. You guys are going to get me on my soapboxes, y'all.
We love your soapbox.
Yes.
I got a whole collection of them.
And we love your passion. That's the important thing. So, Tara, what's coming up next for you? Mentioned Asha, hopefully. I'm sure you'll get your presentation will be accepted. Anything else going on? And how can people reach out and maybe get in touch if they need to or want to?
I do have one invited talk so far for Asha. So I at least know I'll be speaking at least once at Asha. Good. And then I've got two other proposals in there. So fingers crossed. I am still coordinator of SIG 18, holding strong there. So they can find me over at SIG 18. You know, we're doing one night a month where we're doing open fireside chats. So anybody is welcome to show up. And last month we did activities. This month we're doing technology. Next month is still up for debate, but we're trying to think of like productivity tips and tricks for IntelliPractice, like to cut down on the things that are taking us all a ton of time. And people can, it's an open forum. People come, chat, bring those up. I'm always available as Speechy Keen SLP on all the social media platforms, so they can find me there. And then my updated course and the future courses that are coming out are all over at thetelepracticecourse.com.
Wonderful. Awesome. Thank you for being with us and good luck with everything that you're doing.
Thanks.
Thank you, Tara, for joining us on the podcast. I just love Tara's energy and I'm so impressed with her knowledge and she really is into all of the new technologies that are coming and she works very hard to share that information through SIG 18 at Asha, as well as in other presentations that she's doing at Asha and in other places too. So thank you, Tara, for all the work you're doing. And I really appreciate it. And you're one of those people out there that I just think the world of. And good luck with everything that you're doing. And so thank you guys for joining us on this episode. If you don't mind, do me a favor. Reach out to some others. Share this podcast with them. Share this episode with them. Maybe they're interested in some of the technology that Tara talked about. We would love to really grow our listenership. So how can we do that? Is asking you guys to actually invite a few people to listen. We'd love that. So if you can, reach out to others who might be interested in telepractice or telehealth, who you think would get something out of these discussions that we have each week. If you do that, I'll be forever grateful. And so until next week, be safe and be kind. This has been a production of the 3C Digital Media Network.